My guest is Roger Clemens, two-time World Series champion with the New York Yankees, seven-time Cy Young Award winner, the only pitcher in Major League Baseball history to record over 350 wins and strike out over 4,500 batters, 11-time All-Star, two-time Triple Crown winner. We can go on and on and on. Roger Clemens, welcome to Talking Golf.
Thank you, man. It's awesome. I love talking golf. You know that.
Yes, and it was great to reconnect with you at the BMW Charity Pro-Am after interviewing you for my sports interview TV show years ago on a golf course, of all places.
That's exactly right. And I can tell you, my first time, I've been trying to get to the BMW to play with the guys on the Corn Ferry. And what a great experience. What a great tournament, a very well-run tournament. And it was fun meeting those guys. And it's amazing to me how good these golfers are and that they're not on the PGA Tour. It's such a lot of work, just like anything else, you know, working your way to the major leagues or whatever it might be. But it was fun for me to watch these guys hit the ball. They were really good at what they do.
Isn't it exciting to be up close and inside the ropes and playing with these guys? I mean, you know, yes, the BMW Charity Pro-Am class tournament, and those Corn Ferry guys are so good. There's hardly any difference, you know, just a matter of, you know, maybe one or two shots here and there between them and some of the guys on the PGA Tour.
I agree. And, you know, and playing in the really cool events over many years that, you know, I was, you know, over my 24 years in the majors, I was fortunate to play in the AT&T in Pebble Beach a number of years, the Bob Hope many, many years. And these are tournaments where it's fun for me because I get to play next to the guys when they're out there actually trying to earn their living. I mean, these rounds count. They're not a pro-am, and it's not a, you know, a hit-and-giggle type round. They're actually playing for, you know, to move up in FedEx points and things of that nature. So it'd be like, you know, I always told, like, you know, Billy Andrade or Davis Love or Brad Fax, and it'd be like them standing and calling pitches for me right behind the mound or something. And so it's fun for me to play in those rounds and watch how these guys react when they make birdie or they make bogey and really how they play the golf course, you know, and how they break it down. So it's that part of it I still find intriguing. I love doing it, and I love playing with these guys. I've got many friends on the PGA Tour, and it's just so cool to see them and watch them work.
Well, I want to go back and forth between your baseball career and golf. And which one of your many statistics, Roger, from your incredible baseball career do you think are you most proud of?
Well, my longevity, number one, you know, playing 24 years was a blast. I didn't really at one point think I was going to, you know, play that long. I don't know that I would have come out of retirement a couple times if it wasn't for the right people asking that I had a lot of respect for when they called me to ask me to come back and play for their, you know, whatever team it was. But I would say, and probably the biggest thing, you know, coming out of the University of Texas, you know, getting to the major leagues, you know, I realized that my first couple years, maybe year and a half, that I could make a little money doing this. I was able to pay off my mom's car payment and her town home. And then after that, once really, I think after I struck out 20 batters for the first time in Boston in April of 86, and really proved to my teammates that I was healthy and that I belonged, I think that helped me big time, a big stepping stone to my entire career from that point on. So I would probably look to that moment. You know, I had some really cool comments from that I still hold close to my heart with, you know, like a Bruce Hurst. When I struck out 20 that night, Bruce Hurst, he gave me my nickname, the Rocket. He also made the comment that until I got to Boston, pitching was a second-class citizen. and he also not only I think he made the comment to the media that night that not only did my life change, but their lives as pitchers and the organization things changed right on that moment. So probably right there. We went to six World Series, and I tell people two of the losses of those six, and were very emotional. 1986 against the Mets. You got to, before you can talk about the 1986 World Series, you really have to go back a week before when we were one strike away playing the California Angels to getting eliminated. And it was super emotional, back and forth and back and forth. You think you're going home for the end of the year is near, and then Dave Henderson hits a big home run. And, I mean, I remember looking across from dugout to dugout across the field there in Anaheim, and there was one strike away from us being eliminated. I was watching Reggie Jackson kind of hug Gene Mauch. And everything changed, of course, and we got to the World Series and went back and forth and got within one strike of beating the Mets, and that was a crazy series. And then, of course, I always talk, whenever I do an appearance for any corporations or companies, anything of that nature, I always talk about the 2001 World Series, how emotional it was. I was supposed to pitch the night of 9/11. I was a New York Yankee going for my 20th win against my former club, the Red Sox. And I was woken that morning by a friend of mine, and we all know what happened. But probably the coolest thing for me, I mean, the 24 years of playing the majors were really fun, and I enjoyed them to the fullest. But my agents went to high school with General Richard Myers, a four-star general at the time, and he asked me to go to the Middle East to see our men and women. And I went over there for about 7 days and saw about, I don't know, if I had to guess, 12,000 to 14,000, 15,000 of our men and women at different locations. And coolest thing that I've ever done. I had six uncles that served, and my oldest brother served in Vietnam, so I knew what it was about a little bit. But seeing it firsthand and seeing their enthusiasm and seeing how the respect they had for our country and how they were protecting us, there was nothing like it. But Mr. Steinbrenner brought back so many police officers and firemen and public service people there in New York, and their families. They had lost loved ones, so your heart just went out to them, and it's something that I'll carry with me forever, just seeing the faces in the crowd and what went on there. To see President Bush come out and throw out a perfect strike on a game that I had against Arizona, game three, that I could not go out and have a hiccup. I had to pitch extremely well that night, and I did. And so it was just a lot of great memories. I mean, there's nothing like, you pitching. New Yankee Stadium's really cool, but there's nothing like old Yankee Stadiums. I teased the guys that there were ghosts running around in that place the way we came back from some comeback wins we had.
Yeah, and how could I forget? I mean, I covered that 1986 World Series between the Mets and the Red Sox. So anyway, so all that mental focus that it takes to do what you did, to have dominated for, as long as you did in Major League Baseball, do you bring that same kind of focus to the golf course?
Well, that's a great question, and you're dead on. I mean, I go through three phases, and I mean, physically, I got you. I do all the work behind the scenes. I had a saying that kind of stuck, and you'll see it from different places. I think they actually put the saying in the university, in the pitching lab there at the University of Texas, and it was a quote that I said that my only day off is the day I pitch. And so physically there, the mental part of the game is, it's a must. I mean, mentally you have to be unflappable in just about any sport. And when I talk to businessmen and women, I say the same thing in their work field, especially with what we're going through with the COVID and everything like that, to stay in touch with your coworkers and stay focused and try and reach a little higher when things aren't going so well. And then emotions come into play, too. I pitched on emotions a number of times, thought about my mother being sick or my grandmother passing away. And so you really have to try and channel those emotions when they do arise. But, take it right to the golf course. For me, I have to. I'm probably about a 5 handicap, and it's a game that, I should practice more at. I just go out and play. Before some of the cool tournaments like we just had out in Tahoe at the American Century, I'll play a few days before I go out there. But it's great, like I said, listening to you or whoever it is, give a tip or two. I can pretty much, I kind of put that into play like I did with my pitching coach when I was on the mound. That if I was getting away from my mechanics a little bit, the pitching coach would holler from the dugout one or two hot spots that I would tell him to keep an eye on. And I would be able to put it back into play and get back on target within one or two pitches. And that's the same way when I'm going around, when I'm headed around the golf course trying to break the golf course down. But it's fun for me to watch the pros again up close because I'm very visual and I can watch that stuff. But when you're playing with crowds at the AT&T or the Bob Hope or the American Century, and you got you've got all the people lining the fairways, you really do have to focus, because I tease them. I said, if you would let me throw it a couple times per round, I'd feel really good coming out of a bunker or some high rough or something like that. So, but yeah, definitely the focus is the main thing on the golf course also.
You had mentioned the American Century Championship, and I see that Vinny Del Negro became the first basketball player to win it, and he beat John Smoltz. And I see that some of these other pitchers came in ahead of you. What was that all about, Roger?
Hey, I was happy with my – I finished solo 29th. I think it's my highest finish, so I was pretty excited. I'm going to go try for top 10 next year. That would be another good mark. You got to stay away from the double bogeys. They take 2 points away from you. And but we had some individual fun games going on against other guys. And so I was working my way up the leaderboard. I played with Vinny Del Negro. I played with Vinny on Friday. And he made a couple missed a couple short putts for par, and he was locked in. And then he made a couple birdies early in that round. And I'm telling you what, he got some confidence and he got going. And then, of course, the backstory, it was meant to be. You know, he got very emotional after he won, and he never did allude or let us know on Friday that his dad had passed away on that Wednesday. And so it was in the cards for him. He was locked in. He played some beautiful golf, came down the wire with Smoltzy. I mean, there are some great golfers. Some of these dudes play, from what I hear, they play 36 holes of golf 3 or 4 times a week, and they're plus, you know, they're scratch golfers are plus two, and they're really good. They know what they're doing.
What's the best part of your golf game?
My best part of my game is putting from 20 yards off the green with what I call my 4-degree wedge. I break out my putter. We've got a course over in Scotland that we did with the Insperity guys, and it's called Renaissance. And I love going over the play. We got the property right next to Muirfield. We have a beautiful course. Some of the listeners may have seen it. We have the men's and women's Scottish Open there at Renaissance. But I love going over there and trying to beat them at their own game, putting from 20 or 30 yards off the green up to the pin. So, I love the putting aspect of it with the touch and feel. I use a claw grip and go from there. So I love that part of it.
I love it. That's where the Scottish Open was just last week at the
Renaissance. That's right. That's exactly right. That's our course.
How were you involved?
Sorry?
How were you involved in the golf course?
Yeah, we are part owners of the golf
great.
Course. Yes. Yep. We got the property right next to Muirfield, and put together. Tom Doak came over and did the course for us, and it's beautiful. And we're just so happy that the people are enjoying it. We're getting great reviews from the players that come over and play in the Scottish Open a week before the regular Open. And that's really good, too, because a lot of the pros, too, it just depends on the pro. As you know, some of the pros like to play the week. They have to play, actually, the week before a major. Some of them like taking the week off, so it just depends.
We're talking to Roger Clemens, such a legendary pitcher, and you are known to be a very intimidating pitcher. As you know, you weren't afraid to throw close to batters. Do you carry that kind of intimidation persona onto the golf course, or do you have a totally different demeanor?
Oh, yeah. When I miss hit a driver and I have to yell four, it's kind of the same thing. No, I tell people, man, I actually did a couple fireside chats with the great Jack Nicklaus, and that was some questions from the audience about being intimidating this, being intimidating that. And I found it interesting that Jack said that when he got on the scene, he was kind of like the villain because he was beating up on Arnold Palmer, who, you know, everybody's from Arnie's Army loves. But Jack leaned over to me and he said, being intimidating, Rocket, is because you win. You can throw very, very hard and not win, not be very intimidating. And I tell people, I think it was my focus and just the way I went about my work. I learned that from my mother and my grandmother, watching my mom work 3 jobs. I took my work very seriously. But I made a 17-inch plate, a 24-inch plate when I could. And you would always pitch inside. You pitch inside to expand the strike zone. You don't pitch inside to hit guys. But, you're going to. I was a power pitcher. So I had pretty good control where I could double up inside for strikes when I could if it was a big hitter. And I didn't want him to get extended. But, it was, you know, that's kind of like part of the game. That, you know, the game has changed quite a bit where, you know, you don't pitching side as much. The mounds are a little bit higher. Now they've getting rid of this, you know, the what I call the propeller heads are really trying to get these kids to try and worry about spin rate and all this other stuff. It can be a little bit of a disservice to some of the guys where, you know, they try and get into it too much. But, you know, I have a number of major league guys come to my house in Houston to throw, and we work with the guys, and we talk. It's more of a chat session, becomes more of a chat session on how to use the nine quadrants of the strike zone with your fastball, your two different fastballs, the four-seamer and the two-seamer. So I enjoy talking, you know, getting down to the nitty-gritty with the guys when they ask certain questions.
Sure. And so when did you start playing golf, and how did you get exposed to golf?
Yeah, so 1986, after my first full years, Deb got me my first set of clubs, and I started playing. And, you know, I hit like, you know, I hit probably a 10 or 12 yard fade or banana back then, of whatever you want to call it. And I remember Billy. You still hear me there?
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know what that was. So, but yeah, way back in when I first started, Billy Andrade asked me to go play at the AT&T Pebble Beach, my first trip. And I remember him telling me, "What's your handicap?" I said, "Oh, Billy, man, I just started. I hit like a 10 or 12 yard kind of fade banana type deal, and I'm at least a 20 or 22 handicap." He goes, "No, you're not. You're an 18." And I go, "No, I'm more than an 18, Billy. I'm not. You know, my eye hand coordination is good, but blah 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 blah." And he goes, "You're an 18 because you have to be an 18 to play in this." I said, "Okay, I'm an 18." And so. Went out there and played three or four days, and I can tell you what, I had to grind, and we ended up making the top 25, and it was a fun time. I was very, very tired and exhausted just because there were so many people that I was hitting the ball over their heads and down the fairway and stuff like that, so we're grinding it out. But that was my really first experience. I just started playing, and I ended up getting one lesson in Houston from Butch Harmon. Butch helped me a little bit. And I was just playing for them. But I'm so glad that not only Debbie, she's the golfer in the family. She's got 10 club championships. I've got none. So she rubs it in. And I'm so glad she's playing and that my boys play. Because, as you know, it's a game that you have for a lifetime. And we have met so many neat people through the game of golf and really seen the world. Just getting out and playing while you're on the road, seeing different golf courses and things of that nature.
I love it. So Debbie, your wife, has 10 club championships. So what are the competitions like between you and Debbie?
When she gets super quiet, I have to go look at the scorecard because I know she's equal with me or beating me. And then she always gets on me because she says I start ragging on her and teasing her and talking in her backswing and doing all the Seve tricks, you know, trying to rattle the tees in my pocket to distract her. But, she's a good player. She loves it. She has a good group of girls she plays with. And, you know, like all you ladies, you guys can chip and putt, it seems like. Boy, you guys know how to get up and down around the greens, and that's pretty special.
It really comes down to making those putts, that's for sure. But, you know, obviously as a pitcher and as dominant on the mound as you've had been all those years, I mean, as you say, you have great hand-eye coordination, and I'm sure you have a great short game, Roger.
I do at times. I should practice more my wedge. My wedges around the green. But like you said, anywhere I'm in a runway, I've been taught by the great ones that I played with, Arnie and Jack, and they always said if you got it on the ground, you can putt it from just a little bit off. Do it, and I'm pretty comfortable doing that. But yeah, there's sometimes I'm not. I feel I'm pretty good out of bunkers, and I'm the first cut of rough. I'm pretty good because I get. Sometimes if I'm throwing a lot of batting practice, I get a little steep with my descent. But as you know, that's really good out of a bunker or out of the first cut of rough.
Roger, what are your thoughts about getting into the Baseball Hall of Fame? Is it true that next year is the 10th and final year for you to appear on the ballot? Did I read that right?
Yeah, and I believe it is. And, you know, I really after the first year that I did a lot of the media with the guys, after that it's been pretty much – date that just comes and goes by because you have zero control over it. I've said it many times that I have zero control over that. It's not going to make the Hall of Fame's awesome. I didn't play the game to make it to the Hall of Fame. I wasn't really worried about that. I was worried about winning championships And if you do get there, there's a lot of people you have to thank. It's kind of a, for me, it's kind of a selfish thing. During all my milestone dates and the 20 strikeout games or whatever anniversaries I have, and I get calls from my teammates and especially my catchers that I've had, my catchers are very special to me because they had to pay attention to detail. I called about 90-95% of my game from the mound, and those guys are the most important that you would think. You know, there's a lot of people. Again, it's kind of a selfish thing, but the reason you're there is because you had some wonderful teammates and coaches and managers that had confidence in you to get there. So if it happens, great. If it doesn't, it's not going to change me as a person either way.
I have two more questions, one serious and one fun. I know in baseball you did go through a dark period after 2007 when you were under the microscope for steroid allegations and, you know, perjury charges, which you were found not guilty. What was that period like for you and your family?
Well, it was, you know, it wasn't fun for the family, you know, like I told people. And if it wasn't, you know, if you didn't have brothers and sisters and everybody else that were really upset about it, then when somebody gets out there and tells stories about you and untrue stories about you and really trying to make money off your name, which is really what it was all about. Even when in front of Congress, those guys were just getting their 5 minutes of fame. I tell people it was pretty much like a, and I like Jerry Springer, I watched a few Jerry Springer shows, but it was pretty much just like that. And it was a waste of time, but we did it. We went at it like we were supposed to. And when you have the truth on your side, you have no worries whatsoever. I was surprised that some of the Congress people on the other side tried to trick you, but some of the Republican ones that were talking to us before said, just be heads up because that's what they're going to do. And but we did it to the fullest. We did it the right way and had a bunch of teammates come in and tell their stories and managers and general managers. And it was great. That I really appreciated that because I really didn't have a say. So I had to sit there and pretty much listen. But we were an open book and it worked out. It couldn't have worked out any better. And like you said, there was nothing there. So we knew they weren't going to find anything. And boy, did they spend a lot of our taxpayers' money just running up a dry flagpole.
Well, let's lighten things up a little bit. So your most memorable golf round, what would it be?
Oh man. Well, I've had probably 5 hole in ones.
Wow.
And 3 of them came in competition, one at AT&T at Pebble and one at the Bob Hope, which is really cool. I had a good friend, Matthew McConaughey. Matthew was playing with myself and Ruzioni. And I believe Jasper Parnevik was our pro. And the very second hole, I knocked a 9-iron in the hole, and we went on to win the whole deal. So that was pretty memorable. You know, playing with President Bush and Kenny Bunkport, that's a memory I'll take with me. Gosh, there's been so many good ones. You know, being able to get out and see some great courses and, you know, obviously playing Augusta National was a treat. And, just playing with some really cool people and having some great foursomes over the years.
If you had to pick your favorite foursome, could you?
I think I did like an old school one, you know, like it could be anybody. Like I said, like, obviously Cy Young and Babe Ruth and probably JFK. I was a big fan of his and, you know, being in New England and meeting a lot of his family members. So that was a great deal. And I think everybody that knows me knows how close we were with the, with President, you know, Senior Bush 41 and, getting the opportunity to golf with him and Barbara a few times in Kenny Bunkport was a treat.
Wow. Cy Young. Well, of course, you won 7 Cy Young awards.
Yep,
JFK
absolutely.
And Babe Ruth and Roger Clemens. What a foursome. What a fantasy foursome that would be.
Yeah, that'd have been cool.
Roger, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it and hope to see you soon on the links.
Yeah, thanks for asking, Ann. I appreciate it. I'll see you down the road.
Thanks so much. The great Roger Clemens.